You want to turn to Mark chapter 10, we'll be there in just a second. Like Adam said, this is my last sermon here, and even mentioned my various facial hairs. And I think this mustache was a petty attempt at distracting myself from the truth. It's been a hard week. And I can't get away from the truth of the fact that I'm actually leaving here. And I can't adequately express, there's no way, the love that I've been shown, and the encouragement I've been given, and the support I've been given. Starting in the summer, Tim and Andy would randomly give me wads of cash, and because you guys, the church couldn't support me this summer, but individual members would just give. I don't understand that. But once that stopped, the support didn't stop. And more importantly than that, all that money that I was given so I could work and live here, I was just given the most emotional support from a congregation that I think I've ever gotten. And I, you know, keep thinking, I'm so excited to go and preach somewhere else, and the opportunities I have to go to Dublin and to do that work, I'm super excited about that. Like, over and abundantly, some days I'm just really exuberant about that. And then, like, 2 minutes later, I'll get really sad. And it's just hard. At the high school Devo last week, Andy, we studied the rich young ruler, which is a text here in Mark 10. We studied the one in Luke, but I like this one for my purposes tonight. We studied the rich young ruler, and this man comes who, you know, has been really faithful in all these things, but Christ tells him something really hard for him. He has to give up to be better. But, and all that might apply in some way, but look at verse 28. Mark chapter 10, starting verse 28. Peter began to say to him, "Behold, we left everything and followed you." Jesus said, "Truly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or farms for my sake and for the gospel's sake, but that he will receive 100 times as much now in the present age, houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and farms, along with persecutions in the age to come, eternal life." Do you know how many houses I've had in the past couple years? A lot. I left home, and that was hard. Then I came here, and let's just talk about since the summer. I lived with Larry and Jackie for like a couple weeks, then lived at the Lannings for the summer, and then I lived with the Manns for most of my time here, Donna and Al. And then recently I've been staying at Jorge's apartment, and even just in the past year I've had 4 different houses. So, you know, I'm pretty blessed. Some of you are probably pretty jealous of the places I've gotten to live. Let's talk about brothers and sisters in this present age that I've gained. I left home because I thought I could grow and be better and do more work. And I'm leaving here for the same reason. But every time that I've left, it's been hard. And it's been scary. But every time I've gained more brothers and sisters. And it's been proven every time that happens. But every time it's still hard. But that's not where I want to focus on most of this lesson. But this all got me thinking about, and this is where I want us to really get to in our minds and really start thinking. Got me thinking about Abraham. If you want to turn to Genesis 12, we'll be there in just a second. But Abraham is majorly impressive to me. I mean, there's a reason that everybody calls him the father of the faith. His faith in God, God's promises, his faith in what God would do for him in his life, his faith in what God would give him, how God would reward him, how God would be there for him in thick and thin in every situation is absolutely, unequivocally impressive. It's unbeatable. Abraham's faith is incredible. And as I see Abraham from the very beginning being told to leave his family, I can't help but relate. I'm not saying that I'm Abraham. I'm not even close to that level of faith, but I just find encouragement in this man who has done things that I'm trying to do. So let's start actually in chapter 11 near the end, but if you're in chapter 12, it's just right before that. Start in chapter 11, and verse 29. Genesis chapter 11, starting in verse 29. Abram and Nahor took wives for themselves. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Sarai was barren. She had no child. Terah took Abram his son, and Lot his the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldeans, in order to enter the land of Canaan. And they went as far as Haran, and settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country, and from your relatives, and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. So Abram went forth, as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Just some interesting things to note at the start of Abram's story. He marries this woman. What's the first thing said about Sarai? She's barren. And it seems from the get-go of the story that that fact was realized very quickly on. That Sarah was barren, and that was just a fact. That happened before Abram was sent. That happened before Abram was promised anything. Sarah couldn't have children. On top of that, another interesting thing is the fact that it seems like Terah, Abram's father, was almost given a similar calling, right? At the end of chapter 11, they were going to go to Canaan. Where did they end up? Haran. Is that Canaan? No. They didn't make it very far. And I don't know what stopped them. The Bible doesn't tell us, doesn't give us information, but I think it's really interesting to think about this, that Abram, with his father, they both tried to do this already. They both tried to get to Canaan, and for whatever reason, whatever happened, they stopped. Whether it was uncomfortable, whether they were scared, they're nervous about the inhabitants of Canaan, I don't know what was going on in their minds, but they couldn't make it. And maybe the same promise was given to Abram was given to Terah, and he just couldn't do it. I don't know. That's supposition. Whatever happened, they end up in Haran, and then God comes to Abraham and gives him this promise, right? Have you ever thought about the fact that Abraham already knew Sarah was barren when he was given this promise? God's telling him, saying, hey, Abram, look, I'm going to take you this land and make you a great nation. Do you think Abram's mind was saying, I can't even have kids, God. Sarah's barren. There's no children in my family. Who and how am I going to keep on, how am I going to start a nation? No nation can come from me and Sarah. She's barren. But do we see Abram question, or do we see Abram doubt, or do we see Abram say, God, like, that can't happen. It's literally impossible for that to happen. What does he do? God makes all these amazing promises, and something that's already been attempted once in Abram's family, and God makes all these promises to Abram, says, look, all these things will happen to you if you leave, if you go to this land. And he leaves. That's incredible. I don't know how hard it was for him to leave his family. I mean, he was able to take Lot with him. He was able to take his wife with him and some of his servants. But I don't know how close he was to his father. I don't know any of those things. But I can imagine. I've been gone from home for 3 years. And I've gotten to go back and see them a lot. I've been really blessed to do that. But my voicemail box is 100% full. Almost always. You know why? Because it's almost literally impossible for me to delete voicemails from my family. I just don't know. And I can't bring myself to delete those sweet thoughts and delete those annoying, obnoxious voicemails that make me remember. I don't know how hard it was for Abraham to leave. But it's been hard for me to leave. But he left. If you want to turn to Hebrews 11, and keep your finger there, we're going to go back there a couple more times. Maybe put your bookmarker in there, that'll be easier if you have one. Hebrews 11 is, you know, the Hall of Fame of Faith, as some people call it. And the biggest section of text about one person in this section is given about Abraham, father of the faith. So we're going to go back here and read a couple of sections, but starting Hebrews 11 and starting verse 8. This is where it starts talking about Abraham. Hebrews 11 will pick up in verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien, in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. Hebrews really frames it in a way that doesn't make it seem easy, right? Abraham, by faith, was called, and he left. Not knowing where he was going, not knowing what would happen, not knowing how it was going to work out, how was God going to give him a nation, how was God going to bless him and make his name great, how was God going to give him an inheritance when he didn't even have kids? How was that going to happen? He didn't know. But he left. And for that reason, Hebrews remembers him as one of these amazing men of faith in the Bible. But a lot happens in Abraham's life, and I couldn't cover all of Genesis 12 to 25 in one sermon as much as I wanted to. Turn to Genesis 15. We're just going to look at three different texts of Abraham's life, so you can know that we're not going to go through all of it. We're just going to look at three different texts. We already looked at one. We'll look at two more. And look at the faith that Abraham had throughout all of this. There's more examples. You can look at chapter 14 where he won that battle with 318 men against five different kings. We don't know how many men they had, but Abraham had 318. You can imagine five kings probably had at least 319. But by faith, it seemed that Abraham had no problems winning that battle. We could look at that, but we're not going to. Let's look at 15 and see what happens here. Genesis 15, starting in verse 1. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not fear, Abram. I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great." Abram said, "O Lord God, what will you give me since I am childless? And the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus." And Abram said, "Since you have given no offspring to me, one born in my house is my heir." Then behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "This man will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body, he shall be your heir." And he took him outside and said, "Now look toward the heavens and count the stars if you are able to count them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." Then he believed in the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness. That verse is really important in the New Testament. It's really important to all of us. Because I want you again to imagine this. Abraham was older than 75. Now, I don't know how old he was. Maybe 80, maybe somewhere in there. I don't know how long him and Sarah have been married. They probably wanted kids. They probably tried to have kids. They probably really wanted to have a son. And by Abraham's cry here, you can see that it pained him. And he didn't know how any of these things are going to happen. He didn't know. He was confused. He couldn't see how any of these promises would come to fruition. And he says, "God, I don't understand. I know you're a shield, but I don't know how you're going to give me these promises you're promising me. I'm childless." And God doesn't really answer him. Do you see that? I mean, he says that you will have someone from your own heart. You will have a child. I guess that's God's answer, but it'd be really easy for Abraham to still doubt that, wouldn't it? Sure, God, you can say that. We've been trying to have kids. What's going to be different now? Now we're even older. Now it's even harder for us to have kids. What are the chances now? Probability-wise, very slim. But again, just like Abraham left, what does it say here in verse 6? He believed. Abraham just believed. And maybe, and I question why he believed. Like, why was it so, and maybe not easy, but so sudden. Like, why was he able to believe like that? And maybe it was events like Genesis 14, where he won that battle with 318 men, without any qualms, just going in and God saving him. And maybe it was just this life of wondering where God had provided for him time and time and time again. But somehow, Abram had this faith that God would provide this for him, even though it had never been proven up to this point. And that couldn't have been easy. Turn back to Hebrews 11 real quick. After all this, they wait a while longer, almost about 20 years, if I remember my math right. But they end up having Isaac. I think it's important to remember in all this that Abraham wasn't the only faithful one in this scenario. Hebrews 11, picking up where we left off in verse 9. Hebrews 11 and verse 10. "For he was looking for a city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of the heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. If you read through this text, and we didn't read this text, but when these angels come, they start talking to Abram, and Sarah's listening, and they say, look, Sarah's going to have a child in 1 year. Do you remember what Sarah did? She laughs. And that's, Isaac literally means he laughs. But somewhere in there, she still started to believe. And by Abraham's faith, and by Sarah's faith, faith in God that he would do what he said he would do, they had a kid. And all the promises that God promised Abraham, because they had faith, because they believed, there was no odds of it. He was 100, she was 90. It's unheard of. But they believed through all of that. And they had a kid because of their faith. I think Sarah and Abraham are an amazing example to look to for some people who are barren. And there's a lot of interesting verses in the New Testament. There's Hannah, and there's Sarah, and there's Rebecca even, and then there's one of the Psalms, I forget which one, but it talks about God looking towards the barren woman and blessing her. But I think that's a really incredible side point of all of this. But through faith, they were able to have Isaac. So imagine you're Abraham, and after all this, you've waited your whole life, you've waited almost 25 years for God to make good on this promise of giving you a kid, so you can have all these hopes and all these promises of inheritance and the nations and the blessings God promised you, and all your hope relies on who? Who does all of Abraham's hopes rest on at this point? His son Isaac. If Isaac dies, if something happens to Isaac, if Isaac's gone, what hope does Abraham have? None. None of these promises that Abraham was given could happen without Isaac. So turn forward to Genesis chapter 22. If you thought that the challenges and the tests God had given Abraham up to now were difficult, this one, it blows them all out of the water. Because all the hopes, all the promises Abraham had, he probably finally felt confident that God would give it to him. He probably finally felt this confidence that he knew it was going to be okay. Because he had Isaac. But in Genesis 22 and verse 1, this happens. Now it came about after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, of which I will tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son. And he split wood for the burnt offering, and he arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there, and we will worship and return to you. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold, the fire and the wood. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked together. Stop there for a second. So all of Abraham's hopes, everything about that Abraham wanted, all his dreams and his hopes and the promises of God relied on this boy, his son. And God tells him, Abraham, I want you to offer your son. And again, all the questions that you would have, all the questions that I would have being Abraham, like, God, like, I've waited this long. I've waited 25 years from what are you, you're taking him away now? Like, what is going on? What's going to happen? Well, how will I get these promises? How will I get an inheritance without Isaac? Why do I have to get rid of him? But again, we don't see any of those questions. Abraham just goes. He rose early in the morning, he saddled his donkey. And in the beginning of verse 9, it says, when they came to that place of which God had told him, and Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. He said, here I am. He said, do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. We've been going through this story, and I might be wondering what's the point. But again and again, Abraham had no logical reason. I mean, not that's the wrong way to put it. He had a lot of faith in God because of what God had done already. But looking forward, he had no way of knowing how it was going to work. How it was going to work. How was he going to get these promises? He was given Isaac, and that worked. And then Isaac was going to work through Isaac, and then God says, hey, I want you to sacrifice Isaac, your son. And again, he didn't know how it was going to work. And we'll read in Hebrews 11 in a second. He had his ideas, but he didn't know. But yet Abraham still went, and he still did it, and he still sacrificed the things that are most valuable to him because God asked him to. So turn to Hebrews 11. We'll read this final verse in Hebrews 11 at least. Well, actually, we're going to go back there in a second. Never mind. Hebrews 11, picking up in verse 17. Hebrews 11, picking up in verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which also he received him back as a type. Abraham had no idea what God was going to do. He had no idea how this was all going to work out. He had no idea what was going to happen. But by faith, he still went through it. By faith, he still gave up all these, he was willing to give up things that he had confidence in this world, palpable, tangible things, for hope of God blessing him, for hope of God providing for him. How does this all relate to the rich young ruler? And how does this relate to even, why am I relating this to my situation? The lesson I gave Mark for this title, the title I gave for this lesson to Mark was, what would you leave behind? And this is where the question comes to us. This is where the application is for us. God hasn't called us to leave Minneapolis. God hasn't called us to offer up our firstborn only son. God hasn't asked us, or Jesus hasn't asked us, to give up all our riches, sell everything we have, and give it to the poor. And in fact, we have no specific commandments like this that are so all-consuming, that are so difficult, that are so, take so much faith. Sell everything you have. Go do that. Just says that like that. How much does that mean to that man? How much does that mean to you? Offer up your son, Abraham. Go kill him and burn him for me. How much does that mean to you? What's the principle for us, though? I look at the reason I'm leaving, and I'm going because I see a need. And from the principles that I've learned from studying the Bible, I think that I can help there. And I feel a pull. And it's nothing like a voice coming from heaven, like God telling me to do this. Like nothing about that. But I feel a responsibility to go. Like Nehemiah felt on his heart to go build the wall. But it's like, I don't want to have to give everything up to go to do it. And that's why this gives me courage. That's why this gives me hope. That there are people before who've relied on God's promises. And when Peter says, we've left everything for you, he says, in this age you'll receive many more. I rely on those promises. But I just want to take three lessons real quick from Abraham's faith. Three lessons we can learn from Abe about faith in God. The first one is that Abraham's faith was imperfect. And again, like there is not enough time to read all these passages, but there are three examples I can think of where Abraham was unfaithful. When he went to Egypt, and when he was in Abimelech's kingdom, what did he do? Do you remember? You know the story? When he went to Egypt, he said, Sarah's my sister. And he went to Abimelech, he said the same thing. Do you remember what happened in those situations? God cursed those people because they took Sarah, and God was fulfilling his promises to Abraham. Another time, his faith was imperfect when he took Hagar and had Ishmael. And the first thing for me, looking to be like Abraham, looking to try and go and give things up and rely on God's promises by faith, it's encouraging to me to know that the example, the quintessential example of faith, his faith was imperfect. And even though it was difficult, even though it was hard, like, he had faith, but it wasn't perfect. But I think a good side lesson to learn from that, a good motivation for us to keep on relying on God's promises is that even in Abraham's lack of faith, God's promises still rang true. But that wasn't actually good, was it? Because when Abraham had lack of faith, he ended up being a curse to those people instead of a blessing. He was a curse to Hagar, ultimately. He was a curse to Egypt. He was a curse to Abimelech. Because he didn't have faith in God's promises. And so for us, an encouragement is when we look and we stop believe and we have these moments of doubt, they can have consequences. At least they did in Abraham's life. But I think a more encouraging lesson for Abraham's faith is that his faith was contagious. And this is an easy one to miss. But I want you to think about that war in chapter 14 where he won that battle. Who did he take into battle with him? These slaves that he had. And they just followed him. 318 men followed Abraham into this war against four or five kings who probably had thousands and thousands of people fighting against them. I want you to think about Abraham's servant in chapter 24, Genesis, who went and found a bride for Isaac and the whole time prayed and had faith that God would provide. But I think the ultimate example is Hagar. I mean, where was Hagar from? She's from Egypt. She probably didn't believe in Abraham's God when she was given to Abraham. She probably didn't believe in all those things. But what did she do? What was her reaction after she was thrown out? When she was thrown out after Abraham and Sarah had Isaac, she still believed in God. She prayed to God. And so for me, an encouragement I take from looking at Abraham and his faith, even though it was imperfect, he had all these people around him. And all of his servants, who weren't even his own kids, but all these people around him who saw his faith, who lived in his house, who saw him worship his God and have faith in his God, what did they do? They believed in the same God as him. And through all his journeys, wherever God took him, these people he surrounded him with started to believe in the same God as him. I don't believe that Hagar worshipped, was a God worshiper when she started following Abraham. But she came to be. But the third lesson that we learn from Abraham's faith is that he saw to the end. His faith saw to the end. And this is why he was able to do all these things that were hard in the moment. All these things that he didn't know how it would work out. He didn't know whether or not it would work out with Isaac, whether it would work out in going to Canaan, but he did it because he saw to the end. Turn back to Hebrews 11. This is the last verse we'll look at. The section of text we skipped in Hebrews 11 is where we'll pick up. Hebrews 11, verse 13. Hebrews 11, picking up in verse 13. All these died in faith, without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. That is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. These statements they're put on Abraham. It comes in the middle of the two sections talking about Abraham, and it seems to be talking about all these people in this whole section of Hebrews 11. They were strangers and they were exiles and they were pilgrims on this earth. And that's just such a hard lesson to take to heart. Because we have families and we have goods and we have money and we have friendships, we have relationships, we have all sorts of things that are just so good. And they're all blessings from God. God has given us so much and he blesses us with so many things, so many good things we're blessed with. But what's difficult about so many good things, like it's talked about in Proverbs 30, is that if we get too much then we can start to forget God. And I believe that's what happened with the rich young ruler. He followed God, and Jesus even loved him because of his righteousness. But in the end, he had something between him and God, right? And I think this is the hardest lesson for us. This is where faith really comes in. Faith isn't faith if it's just following God because it's convenient, right? It wasn't convenient for Abraham to leave to go to Canaan. It wasn't convenient for Abraham to kill his son. And just like that for us, there are a lot of things we follow that are convenient, right? Being a part of a church, a lot of people go to church just because it's a social club. Because they can meet people and be a part of something and have friends and relationships and build close relationships through church. And if we're not careful, we can start to look at things. It's easy to go to things that are convenient for us. And church can be convenience because we get all these benefits from it. We get friends, we get relationships. Or being moral has its benefits because we're moral. Because we're good people and people look at us as good people. And my point is just this. The following God has a lot of conveniences. And it's easy to just follow God and do all the things that are convenient and then to ignore the things that are inconvenient, right? to follow God, to worship Him, and to say, yeah, God, I believe in You. Yeah, God, I'll do what You want me to do. I'll be who You want me to be. But then in these areas that are difficult, these areas where it takes us risking and it takes us giving up on things that we really, really love, we're saying, I don't know about that. I don't know if I can give up this life here. I don't know if I can give up these relationships here. I don't know if I can give up on my family. I mean, I've heard stories about new converts that just can't get over the separation from their family. And because of that relationship, that close relationship with their family, and the approval or disapproval of their family means so much to them, they turn back on God. And the hard thing is that we're all called to do difficult things for our faith. And I don't know what it is for each of you. I don't know what it is for me even. We have to figure that out, though. And the principles we have from Abraham and the rich young ruler even, what it stands for, what it calls to us to say, look, you're pilgrims, you're exiles, you're sojourners on this earth, and what does that mean? That if there's anything between us and serving God, if there's anything that we wouldn't give up to better serve God, then we're not actually serving God. We don't actually have faith. Because it doesn't take faith to serve God in all the ways that it benefits us. It just doesn't take faith to do that. It takes faith to serve God in the way that doesn't benefit us. And that's where faith comes in. So if you want to know if you have faith, you have to look inside. You have to look inside your life, look at your life, look what you're doing and say, could I give this up for God? Could I give up my family? Could I offer up my child? And we don't have to literally do those things, and there's no way we have. In actuality, we'll have to do that. But sometimes those things happen. People lose kids. People lose family. People lose parents. People lose close relationships. And some people, it shipwrecks their faith. But I think the biggest lesson we can learn from Abraham is this question. What would you be willing to leave behind for God? It has to be everything. Because the truth of the matter is, just like Hebrews 11 says here, they have confessed that they were strangers and exiles in the earth. And we all want to be people that God isn't ashamed to call us as God. And that's the end of the day, what it means. This faith, it takes faith, it takes doing things that, not knowing necessarily what the end is going to be, Abraham thinking, well, maybe God can raise him from the dead. But not knowing exactly how it's going to happen, how it's going to work. In the moment, it's unclear, it's hard, it's difficult, it's emotional. But having faith that in the end, God will deliver on His promises because God is righteous. He always has been. For generations and generations, God has been faithful. And He won't stop. So those are my thoughts. I hope it was helpful. It's difficult for me to organize all of that a little bit. But Abraham has been my encouragement this week. And I hope that at the end of the day, if it's only one thing, is encourage you to read Abraham's story. And to think about yourself and to think about how you can fit into that kind of example. Because that's what we're called to do. Abraham's the father of the faith, and our faith comes from him. So I hope this was helpful. We're going to sing a song in a second. And the song is designed for anybody who needs help. If you want to study, you want to know what it takes to be a Christian, to serve this God who is always righteous, always faithful, we can help you with that. Or if you're a Christian who's just lost track of what's going on, lost your faith in God, we can help you with that too. If there's really anything we can help you with, we all want to help you. So please let us know of any needs you might have as we stand and sing this final song.